You are listening to Mind Over Matters here on KEXP 90.3 FM Seattle. For those of you tuning in for Making Contact, we're putting that on the back burner this morning, and instead we are doing a special Sunday morning edition of Community Forum. And we are very lucky to have here live in the studios this morning David Krieger, who is president of the Nuclear Age Peace Foundation, and was in Seattle here for a conference yesterday. Thank you for coming in, David.
Thank you. Good to be here.
Let me start out. Let me ask you, what is the Nuclear Age Peace Foundation?
Nuclear Age Peace Foundation is an organization that works for the abolition of nuclear weapons, the strengthening of international law, and the use of science and technology for constructive rather than destructive purposes. Basically, the organization believes that peace is an imperative of the nuclear age. The dangers are just too great in the world with nuclear weapons to have anything other than peace.
Now, have you found that your priorities have shifted any since September 11th of this year?
Our priorities are the same. We're still working for the abolition of nuclear weapons and the strengthening of international law. I think that the current situation puts a kind of a break wall, in a way, between getting at those issues, because we have to stop, in a sense, what we're doing and think about what's going on in the world. And, of course, the very serious issues are before us now with regard to terrorism, with regard to the United States' response to terrorism. And nuclear issues are very key in all of this. I mean, there are tremendous threats with regard to nuclear weapons now in relation to what's going on in Afghanistan, in relation to the terrorists, in relation to policies of our country that have made the possibility of nuclear weapons getting into the hands of terrorists greater.
So I know that you've written numerous papers on this issue, and I'm wondering, what do you see as some immediate priorities right now for what the U.S. should be focusing on?
I think right now the United States should be focusing on trying to protect the American people. They should be focusing on protecting all of the nuclear power plants in this country, which are dormant radiological weapons and could cause tremendous upheaval and deaths in our society if those were attacked by terrorists. I think we should be concentrating as a society on getting all weapons of mass destruction under control. And basically, I think our emphasis should be on, first, protecting the American people, secondly, trying to understand the roots of the hatred that's being expressed toward the United States through terrorism, and deal with some of the underlying problems. I'm not sure that the approach that our government has been taking of actually going to war in Afghanistan in an attempt to capture or kill bin Laden is likely to make us more secure in the end. It's just quite possible that it's going to make us less secure, and it's certainly making thousands, tens of thousands, probably in the end millions of Afghan people less secure.
And are you concerned with Pakistan is now a major player in this current conflict? And, of course, Pakistan and India both have nuclear weapons. Does that raise...
Yeah, of course, that raises very serious problems. Pakistan, supposedly, they've got some more than 80% of the population supportive of the Taliban. And although the government is supporting the United States, that creates a somewhat unstable situation in Pakistan. And Pakistan has 30 to 50 nuclear weapons, something on that order. And if those weapons should fall into the hands of Taliban supporters, bin Laden supporters, they represent an enormous danger to the United States and to civilization, I would say. So, yes. And interestingly, one of the few places where United States nuclear policy has changed since September 11th is in our policy toward Pakistan and India. We put sanctions on both countries after they tested nuclear weapons in 1998, and now we've removed those sanctions in order to draw them into our coalition against terrorism and, in essence, to give them something in return for giving us support in this effort against bin Laden.
And yet the original reasons that we had for imposing those sanctions, have those changed?
No, the original reasons for imposing the sanctions were that we wanted to penalize them for the proliferation of nuclear weapons. We didn't want other countries to develop nuclear arsenals, as they have both done. However, it's a bit hypocritical, because we've always acted as though nuclear weapons for us are just fine. And if you're part of the nuclear club, then it's okay. But if you're not, you shouldn't have those weapons. And we've had, a hypocritical policy of saying, you know, do as I say, not as I do. And our reliance upon nuclear weapons, I think, was directly related to the Indians finally saying, well, if you're going to rely on these weapons for security, so are we. And then the Indian decision, I think, led to the Pakistani decision. So, there's sort of a snowball effect there. And that can, it's possible for that snowball to continue on. There's other states that would like to have nuclear weapons to provide for their defense, so-called defense. I don't think nuclear weapons, in fact, can provide for anybody's defense. But as long as the United States acts and behaves as though they do, we're setting the wrong example in the world. And right now, I would say the United States should be doing everything in its power to reduce the number of nuclear weapons down to just a handful, so that there's no possibility of those weapons falling into the hands of terrorists, so that every country that has them under complete control, to the extent that's possible in a place like Pakistan. But now there's still some 30,000 or more nuclear weapons in the world, and those numbers, if we want to realistically feel some sense of ability to control those weapons throughout the world, the numbers should be in the tens or the hundreds rather than in the thousands. And that should only be on the way to zero.
Give us a picture of how many nuclear weapons the U.S. has in its arsenal.
The U.S. Has approximately 12,000 nuclear weapons still in its arsenal. That includes reserves and weapons that are on the shelf, and approximately 6,700 or so of those 7,000, somewhere in that area, are strategic nuclear weapons, the kind that can strike against Russia, say, or China. But of course, we continue to rely upon a policy of deterrence, and we might be asking in the post-Cold War period, exactly who are we deterring? Now, why do we need those weapons? Because who is it that we're trying to prevent from attacking us with nuclear weapons? Russia really isn't our enemy. China isn't our enemy, unless we manufacture them into being through our rather foolish insistence on going forward with missile defenses. Rogue states, so-called rogue states, North Korea, Iran, Iraq, don't have nuclear weapons, don't have missiles capable of reaching the United States at this point, and it's unlikely that they will. And North Korea has been willing to enter into an agreement that was negotiated with the Clinton administration to reduce the production of missiles to under 300 miles. So, and to stop the export of all missiles. And they previously had agreed to accept some nuclear power plants in exchange for the ones that they had, which were more prone to producing materials for nuclear weapons. So North Korea could easily, I think, by agreements already reached, be brought under pretty tight safeguards toward ending their threat, and they're the ones that have been exporting to Iraq. So if we were to go forward with that, that would make a tremendous difference in having to worry about a threat from the so-called rogue states. And the Bush administration, unfortunately, has not been willing to implement the agreement that was brought to the place of signing by the Clinton administration. The Bush administration has said no, and I would surmise that the reason they've said no is because they don't want to quell the possibility of threat. That would in fact take away their strongest argument that they're making for their missile defense program.
So since September 11th, there's been a lot of deal-making going on between the U.S. and, as you give an example, of Pakistan in exchange for their support. We're looking the other way on our previous sanctions. I also understand that, at least from the newspapers, that it looks like we're trying to do some deals with Russia. And I'm wondering if you have hope of things getting better because of that, or if it's really just the same thing we were negotiating prior to September 11th.
Are you referring to negotiations with regard to missile defenses?
Or, yeah, missile defense.
I mean, we need Russia. We need Russia as a partner if we're going to have some kind of a worldwide effort against terrorism. I mean, Russia is essential to that. Russian intelligence is essential to that. And all along, up until September 11th, it was the United States' position that we should unilaterally abrogate the anti-ballistic missile treaty if necessary in order to go forward with our missile defense program. And Russia was saying then and says now that the anti-ballistic missile treaty is the cornerstone of strategic stability in the world and shouldn't be abrogated. So there's still a kind of standoff there between the United States and Russia. I think that was discussed between Bush and Putin yesterday. So I think the United States actually is being rather foolish in pressing ahead with its missile defense program and its willingness to abrogate the anti-ballistic missile treaty. If we want to keep Russia as a close friend and ally for many, many other reasons, I mean, we're by going forward with missile defenses, we are in essence saying to Russia, first of all, we don't care about this agreement we've entered into with you. If you need to develop more nuclear weapons because you feel less secure, if we have missile defenses, we'll go right ahead, be our guest. And incidentally, we're saying the same thing to China, in essence. So I think missile defenses, in the end, are a policy that is totally against the security interests of the United States. The administration formulates it as something that will improve our security. In fact, I think it's something that will decrease global security and United States security dramatically. And the administration needs to wake up about this, and I don't think they're going to do that unless the American people let them know that that certainly since September 11th, we should be focusing on much more clear and present dangers to the United States in the form of terrorism than we should be focusing on pouring money into this boondoggle of a program that is never going to provide any security and, in fact, is going to seriously decrease the security of our country.
I know one analysis had called national missile defense pretty much the most expensive research project in the history of the world so far. So,
well, it's so far, I mean, we've spent some $100 billion on it, and the price tag could be many hundreds of billions in the future. If we continue going forward with it, it's also sort of a Trojan horse to move weapons into outer space, and that again is an area that uh, I don't a place I don't think we want to go, a place that would dramatically, in the end, undermine security for the United States and for the world.
Talk about, if you would, early on in the Bush administration, they had given lip service to reducing our nuclear arsenal. And since that time, now it appears that it's more of a bargaining chip with the Russians. Is there any hope that that's going to come through?
Early on, during his campaign, Mr. Bush said, we will unilaterally reduce our nuclear arsenal, and we will take as many nuclear weapons that are currently on hair trigger alert off of that status. So far, he has not done either. The Russians have been very active in trying to get the United States to reduce the size of both nuclear arsenals, to go on from start two to start three. The Russians have, for a long time, been throwing out the figure of going down to 1,500 strategic nuclear weapons on each side or lower, and the United States has been resistant of those numbers. So the Bush administration now is essentially saying to the Russians, we'll go down with you if you'll go along with our missile defense plans and the amendment or abrogation of the anti-ballistic missile treaty. I mean, it's a nonsensical policy, because every nuclear weapon that's removed from the Russian arsenal only makes the United States more secure. I mean, we should be doing that without trying to gain some perceived advantage from the Russians. There is no perceived advantage to be gained other than getting those weapons down to the lowest possible numbers and getting them off hair trigger alert, which is amazingly, amazingly stupid that after the 10 years after the end of the Cold War, the United States and the Russians together still have some 4,500 nuclear weapons on hair trigger alert. There's absolutely no reason for that to be the case. And in fact, it creates an enormous danger, because the Russian early warning system has deteriorated dramatically, and those weapons being on hair trigger alert constitute a real threat to the United States and to Russia and to the rest of the world.
And I don't think that's something that's been covered in major media very much, that we're still at that state with all these weapons on hair trigger alert. I think a lot of people went into a dream state after the Berlin Wall came down and assumed everything was okay.
I think you're right. I think at the end of the Cold War, people thought the problem of nuclear weapons had gone away, that problem was over, we could get on to other things. But in fact, it hasn't, and the major obstacle to real progress in nuclear disarmament has been the United States. We've made many, many promises, we have many obligations, and we have refused to honor those obligations and commitments under the Non-Proliferation Treaty primarily. But we've also failed to ratify the comprehensive test ban. We've also continued on with subcritical testing of nuclear weapons. We've developed this new B-61-11 so-called bunker buster nuclear weapon, and there's even some talk of using such a weapon to get at bin Laden in his caves in Afghanistan. I think that would be a tremendous mistake to use nuclear weapons under any circumstances anywhere for the United States. Would just open a Pandora's box that would lead to other countries feeling that they could use those weapons if they thought it was appropriate for their ends.
I think a lot of other countries too have to be questioning with the examples you just gave, the U.S. Wiggling out of different treaties, exactly what value it must be being approached by the U.S. now and saying, you know, we'll do this for you if you do this for us. They have to really, I would think, be really wary of going into any deal with us right now.
Yes, I think there's some truth to that. And, you know, we've basically, unfortunately, not been a very good global citizen. We haven't supported the Landmines Treaty. We haven't supported the Comprehensive Test Ban Treaty. We haven't supported the International Criminal Court. We haven't supported the Law of the Sea, the Treaty on the Kyoto Accords on Global Warming. The Biological Weapons Convention, to put some verification procedures into that convention as a protocol. On almost every front, the United States has just been saying no, 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 no to treaties, to international law, to moving forward with global cooperation. And suddenly we've had this terrorist attack, and the United States has awakened somewhat to the need for international cooperation, but we still have not really embraced any of these treaties that we've been turning down. One of the most important, incidentally, is the Treaty for an International Criminal Court, that would be a treaty capable and a court capable of bringing people like terrorists and bin Laden to justice before an international tribunal, which would be tremendously important. Because if by chance bin Laden were captured and brought back to the United States, I think it's very unlikely that it would be perceived in the rest of the world that he would be given a fair trial here. So you need an international tribunal to deal with people like bin Laden, and also government officials who commit heinous crimes against humanity and war crimes. We really need this kind of court. The world is embracing it. It's on its way to entering into force in 2002. I think it has more than 40 ratifications of the 60 that it needs. And the United States has signed that agreement on the last day of the Clinton administration. He signed it just to keep us involved in the game. But the Bush administration has indicated that it has no desire to send that treaty to the Senate for ratification, and has in fact been quite hostile to the idea of an international criminal court.
So what can we do as citizens? What would you see as the most plausible route towards solving our nuclear dilemma that we are in right now?
Well, I think the first thing is that citizens need to recognize there is a problem. The problem did not go away with the end of the Cold War. It's more than 10 years later, and the problem probably is greater than ever, and the danger is more serious than ever. So I think the first thing is recognize there's a problem. Second thing is to educate yourself a little bit on the nature of the problem. And I'll just recommend our website at the Nuclear Age Peace Foundation, which is www.wagingpeace.org. So it's wagingpeace as one word, .org. There's a tremendous amount of information. It's fairly simply put out. There's a fact sheet that will help get people started if they need that. So first thing, recognize there's a problem. Second thing, get some more information. And the third thing is begin to speak out and just talk to your friends about it. Just spread the word. Just let people know that this issue is still before us, and that we really need to be doing something about it as a society. Then I would suggest writing letters to the media, writing letters to your elected officials, particularly officials at the local level, and then your congressional representatives. And just letting them know that this is an issue that matters, that you want some action from them on this issue. And beyond that, I think that everybody has to use their creativity, maybe get involved with an organization here in your community, wherever you happen to be, that is working on these issues, and help out in whatever way you can. Help out with your intelligence, with your willingness to take some time, with giving some money. There's so many ways that people can help, and I would encourage everyone to get involved, to realize that this is probably the most serious problem confronting humanity that exists, and we all have some responsibility for dealing with it. I mean, nuclear weapons remain a problem that could lead to the annihilation of the whole human species, the destruction of civilization, and all of us need to be part of the solution rather than remaining ignorant or apathetic to such a serious problem.
So if you could drop a specific wish list, like currently it seems like a lot of organizations in the U.S. are getting their wish lists out and getting a lot of things passed. But if you could do a specific wish list about things that we need to do, concrete steps that if you were in charge of the government, you could do, like, let's say, reduce the arsenal to X, what would be on that wish list?
I would want our government to play a leadership role in, first, de-alerting all nuclear weapons. Secondly, making a public commitment to going forward with creating a treaty to eliminate all nuclear weapons, to move very rapidly toward the implementation of that treaty, we need to start with getting an inventory of all nuclear weapons and nuclear materials in the world. We need to put them under the tightest safeguards. We need to move rapidly down to a very small number of nuclear weapons that can be adequately controlled, definitely controlled by each nuclear weapons state. And we need to institute policies of no first use of nuclear weapons. And we need at the same time to embrace policies of global cooperation. All of those treaties that I mentioned to you before, the International Criminal Court, the Law of the Sea, the Kyoto Accords, all of those need to be at the same time embraced, and we need to move forward with global cooperation. And if we want, and if we really want to solve the problem of terrorism, we need to begin to change our policies toward trying to create more justice and more equity throughout the world. Because if there's anything we should have learned from September 11th, it is that we are vulnerable, and as long as the security of people anywhere is diminished to the point that it generates desperation and hatred, then we will be subject to being attacked, and our vulnerability almost assures that some of those attacks will be successful. So if we want to be secure in the United States and in the West generally, I think our policies need to be such that we try to build the security of people everywhere.
All right, we've been talking with David Krieger, who is president of the Nuclear Age Peace Foundation. And David, how do people get a hold of your organization?
The best way to get a hold of us is to visit our website, www.wagingpeace.org. Actually, we have a second website that has lots of information on nuclear issues at www.nuclearfiles.org. Or you could contact us at our headquarters in Santa Barbara, California, and you can reach us by our general email address is wagingpeace@NAPF, like Nuclear Age Peace Foundation, .org.
All right. Well, I want to thank you for coming in this morning.
Thank you. Pleasure.